Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Time to take a look at summer ventilation, dehumidifying, and other kinds of home repair issues as we visit with Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner, John's Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. I think last month, last time they were on, on our Facebook, we had a link to the Energy Center, so this time we put a link to Chad's Carpentry on. So we're switching it off back and forth. So if you want to take a look at Chad's link, Chad's site, I hope you'll do that. And just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can click right on it. John, great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. It's been a couple months.
Yeah, been a couple months. Chad, good to see you again.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
And you're busy. That's good.
Yep, very busy.
That's wonderful. Well, when we think about battling humidity, which we had plenty of, although today is pretty nice, it's going to be hot and it's going to be humid. What are some methods, some good methods for reducing humidity in the home? And John, I can start with you.
Sure. Operating, keeping those windows closed up. Obviously, the humidity comes from exterior to the interior. So, comfort on the living levels. Keeping the house buttoned up. Excuse me. And obviously, the air conditioner really helps out a bunch for that dehumidification, as well as keeping the temperature a little bit lower than it would otherwise. A lot of people have problems or concerns in the basement for high humidity, and we start getting a little bit of musty smell down there in these summer months, where we humidity from the exterior through leaks in the holes and the cracks in the seams. In the rim joist area, or if we have windows in the basement open, cracked open for ventilation, that's obviously going to bring some concerns, or even condensation on the cold water lines wherever there's a cold surface. So keeping that humidity out, obviously, is the first line of defense. And then there's just, in Wisconsin, humid climates, running that dehumidifier in the basement, there's just no way around that to keep that basement dry, regardless how tight that basement is. So a good dehumidifier, as well as avoiding bringing moisture in from the exterior. Even just simply, some people I find will hang clothes on the line down in the basement in the summer right next to their dehumidifier, so they're kind of battling each other. So you find unusual circumstances like that.
And Chad, anything from you on that? What about running that your furnace fan?
Sure. Well, that certainly, if you run the fan only, then that will recirculate the air throughout the house, and that is a strategy to try to, you know, even out the temperature on the various levels. And for people that have a whole house fan, which a large fan up in the hallway of the top floor, it's best, consistent with what John just said, to run that at nighttime when the humidity levels are lower or the temperature is lower. You're going to open up a few windows in the lower levels, and you're going to bring in the cooler outside air, but then you're going to shut that system down earlier mid-morning and close up the house and hopefully keep the house temperature cooler and less humid.
Okay, so those are some things we can do. Nick in Green Bay has a question for you guys, so let's go there. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, we live in a duplex, and we don't have a basement. It's been turned into a family rec room.
Okay.
And we're renting, but we've got a half bath downstairs, and my problem is we've always got mold in that toilet. And before I picked up the dehumidifier, the back underneath the bowl was just caked with mold. Any reason for that, or how to get rid of that, or if we put the chlorine, like the tablets in the mold cleaner in the tank, it goes away until the tablet's gone. Then once the tablet's gone, it mold comes right back.
Yeah, anytime we're doing a mold investigation, that's one spot that we can count on or have a high likelihood of mold growth. And that's really just because the temperature of the city water or well water that's coming in is 50, 55 degrees, and that's making that porcelain really cold. So we're getting condensation on the bottom of the bowl or the bottom of the water tank, and darn it, it just stays wet there. And
is that mold dangerous?
It It's not necessarily dangerous to most people, though I won't rule that out to those who are have compromised immune systems or that are sick. Those types of things, certainly mold is always can be an irritant, and it's going to change from person to person. Simply, generally, it's a pretty small area, and in the worst of the winter, it is simply just keeping that area dry, keeping a rag down on the floor, or mopping that up and wiping it with some routine, just to keep it dry. Running maybe a bath fan, certainly, trying to keep the humidity down when you're showering and bathing in the summertime and the wintertime is always a good idea. But it's difficult to eliminate that altogether.
Yeah.
You made the firework well, though. Holy cow.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I have an email from Sally in Menominee Falls. I'm planning to remodel our bathroom. Walls of our 50s home are plaster. Any problem with leaving the ceiling plaster with green board on the walls leading up to the ceiling? I was also thinking of leaving the small bit of wall above the doorway as plaster. So can you kind of...
That's fine. If the ceiling and one or more walls are in good condition and you want to leave them and simply integrate a new wall up to the old, there's no reason not to do that. There are opportunities, certainly, that we might want to consider in a bathroom. Oftentimes the tub wall is connects to the exterior. And we often find in older homes that there's not much in the way of good insulation or air sealing in that exterior wall behind the tub. And if the tub is coming out and it's being redone, it's really important to gut that wall and to seal it up well. I would also say that green board or that kind of water-resistant drywall is not a recommended base for any tile that's going to be applied in the bathroom. You should have cement board behind that. That's not to say that there aren't people that still put green board behind it, but if green board gets wet, it will dissolve eventually. So I would not recommend that in a very wet area.
There we go. Let's go to turn to Ron in Blooming Grove next. Hi, Ron. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I wanted to follow up on the dehumidifiers, laundry, air conditioners, etc. Particularly in condominium complexes, but perhaps in other neighborhoods, outdoor clotheslines are prohibited, so the folks are left with an option of hanging laundry in their basement or drying it in their own or a commercial gas-fired or electric dryer. I wondered if you hung laundry in your own basement and had the dehumidifier operating from 10 p.m. to 10 a.m., you know, when the electric demand is lowest and the prices are less, if that would be more efficient than running it in an electric clothes dryer or in a LP gas or a natural gas fired clothes dryer. And this is a summer question, of course. And the winter question is, if a person happens to have an electric clothes dryer, laundry dryer, so there's no concern about carbon monoxide, is it safe to capture the lint out of the dryer exhaust, but to then recirculate the hot, humid air from the dryer throughout the house during the, you know, December, January, February, when you're trying to add humidity and heat to the other rooms in the dwelling?
I'll take that last question first.
Okay.
Yep. And bringing humidity in to the home during the winter months through the dryer. We'd like to do that other ways, simply through some other conservation methods and strategies to reduce the air leakage within the house, and then you really don't always, or we reduce the chances of needing extra humidity if the home isn't leaking. Our homes get dry because we get that cold, dry air from the winter blowing in and out through all the cracks and seams in the home. Bringing it in through the dryer and filtering it lint out, that's just something then we have to have a pretty good awareness of. Are we creating issues someplace else? Is humidity reaching our cold surfaces or foundation walls? And if it's that high humidity and moisture from the dryer is coming in contact with a concrete basement foundation wall and it's 0 degrees outside, we might get condensation there or create some other localized concerns. But if we can manage it well, and you don't see any symptoms, yeah, you can do it. But it just takes a little bit more awareness to make that happen and not cause additional problems, which can occur. And the first question was...
Where outdoor clotheslines are prohibited.
Right, right. It's kind of cost effectiveness. You know, I think running a gas dryer is probably still going to be maybe the best choice, and trying to dehumidify with an electric compressor in that dehumidifier for 12 hours throughout the day. I haven't looked at that directly, but my sense is the gas dryer is going to be a little bit better. And even electric dryer, running a motor to circulate the tumbler and the electric heating elements. My choice would be that dehumidifier maybe for 12 hours. It's not that much of a draw versus the electric heating elements. I could be wrong on that. It might be a toss-up.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Fran, and before we get to Fran, hold on there in Westfield. We'll be right with you. We had a comment from Wayne in New Berlin for avoiding sweating on the toilet. I'm not sure I understand it exactly, but he said he added mixing valves to the lines coming to the toilet, and he hasn't had a problem since he did that.
So he's running a little bit of hot water line to the tank instead of a single cold water line.
Oh, that's what he's doing.
To mix a little warmth in there to reduce that. So certainly that sounds like a remedy, and using a little bit of hot water to manage and a little bit of draw. That's a unique approach. Yeah. So we use a little bit of energy, but regardless, either it's physical energy, wiping and keeping it dry and routine maintenance, or it's a little out of the pocketbook to heat a little water.
There we go. Fran in Westfield, we're on to you now. Hi, Fran.
Hi there. My question is, instead of running a dehumidifier in the basement, would it be feasible, or can you do it, if you take an air conditioner, put it by the drain, and have the air conditioner just sitting on the cinder block in the basement and let it run and use that as a dehumidifier for costing less money?
I'm going to say that it's not going to cost you less money than a dehumidifier that's designed for this purpose. That window air conditioner, it might even have a little bit more BTU capacity where, you know, both the dehumidifier and an air conditioner is going to dump heat into the house. That's what your dehumidifier does. It does warm up the basement, which in itself lowers the relative humidity because it has the capacity to raise the temperature. Hence, the humidity goes down. The air conditioner would do the same thing, but my feeling would be it would add a little bit more heat at the same time to that basement, which obviously sometimes we hang out down there because it's cool.
Yeah.
So not necessarily more efficient or lower cost.
There you
okay.
go.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, with your questions for Chad Spate and John Viner as we visit with them about home renovation and repair. Zeroed in a little bit. We've answered quite a few questions about summer ventilation and dehumidifying here. But join in, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, email at talk@WPR.org, or post a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Net as we visit with Chad Spate of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, who is with the Energy Center of Wisconsin. So great to have them along, and thank you so much for listening in. Marty emailed us, we're planning to add a 12x12 screen porch to our three-season cabin in northern Wisconsin. There'll be no glazing, only screen. Would there be any benefit to insulating the ceiling, perhaps keeping it from overheating in the summertime? What do you think, Chad?
I would always recommend an insulated ceiling if you're going to be closing it up. Of course, one option is to leave the rafters exposed and have a more rustic look. But if you are going to be closing up the cavities, you need to think about probably ventilating the roof deck on the underside of the roof deck and then having insulation in those cavities so that you will moderate the heat gain when you're out there enjoying it, particularly if it's a south or west facing porch. I mean, you're likely to have a lot of heat radiating down and building up in those cavities if you just leave it to chance.
Yeah, I'm not so sure for that all that screen on, what, three sides, Chad, that we want to insulate that. I think regardless, the temperature is going to be pretty very little temperature difference between inside and outside, regardless if we insulate there. So I'm not so sure we're gaining a whole bunch insulating those cavities. If you were thinking down the road you might close it in, then we do it now. But just difference of opinion there.
Let me add that I'll be happy if he doesn't insulate it now, because when they hire the remodeling contractor to remodel it, they'll have to tear down the ceiling. So, I mean, I'm always thinking about the next guy. But,
That's a good point. Pete in Caledonia has a question for you guys. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I don't run a dehumidifier downstairs in my basement. I run a window air conditioner.
Okay.
And I put it right in the window downstairs. Do you think that gets you, removes most of the moisture, or it could? Because it's just pouring water outside.
Yeah, I think that certainly has the capacity to keep the humidity low. And sometimes a relative humidity meter hygrometer is just nice to monitor it yourself and keep tabs of it. You know, my humidity in the basement is probably around 50-some, low 50% humidity. And, you know, we certainly don't want it, you know, 70 is really, really high. So we want to keep it much below 70. And if we can keep it in the low 50s, then you're doing fine.
Right. See, then that way the heat from the dehumidifier don't fight the air conditioner upstairs.
Yep. And if that's doing the job for you, then I think that's a great way to go. And maybe you have some, do you use it for living space down there as well?
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you got a window and you put that through there, I think that's a fine way to go to maintain comfort. Not that you won't get some condensation maybe on cold water lines, on really cold surfaces, but it's going to take care of the majority of it.
Okay. Thanks, Pete. Thank you for calling. And Joe and Stevens Point, on to you now. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
I have an odd question. My mom used to do this when I was a kid. They were able to pull cold air from the basement up by using the fan from the furnace and pull cold air. Is there an economical way, a simple way to try to take advantage of that cool air to kind of bring it up and distribute it through the house?
Well, using the fan on your furnace, if you have a forced air furnace system, then you can just turn on the fan without actually firing up an air conditioner. And, of course, if you just have a furnace without air conditioner, you can turn on the fan and obviously not be running the heat in the summertime. But that will recirculate air throughout the house. And then you can also, strategically place some actual room fans to push air up a stairway or around the house in ways that contribute to greater comfort.
Okay. Yeah,
a question would be, do you have cold air returns in the basement?
I have them throughout the house. I think there are cold air returns in the basement, yes.
Okay, and just some will take the initiative to actually add or increase the amount of cold air return to draw air from the basement to move it throughout the rest of the house. And there is some caution there to running that furnace fan. If we have combustion appliances that vent into a chimney, like a water heater or the furnace, and they're not direct or power vented, running that furnace fan on a continuous basis or even intermittently, it can affect the ability of those appliances to draft up that chimney. So we want to know that we're not causing harm there by running that fan and increasing returns. Or even in the summertime, those appliances don't vent very strongly, or the draft up the chimneys are relatively weak in the summertime. So they're a little bit more likely to pull those flue gases, and we're concerned about carbon monoxide in particular, into the home. So we just got to know we're not creating that type of concern if those appliances exist.
How do I, and they do exist, I mean, the hot water heater is vented up through an old chimney, as is the furnace. Do I just make sure? I mean, I've got carbon monoxide detectors. Is that probably my best way to
ensure
that we don't run into a problem?
For a homeowner, one thing that you could do is maybe turn on the fan, maybe turn on your dryer and some kitchen fans, bath fans, and on top of that water heater, there's what we call a diverter where air goes into that vent from the home. And if you backdraft that chimney and pull the flue gases the wrong way, you can put your back of your hand up to that diverter and you're going to feel hot flue gases coming into the house. So, you know, if you're walking by occasionally, try to understand if you feel or sense it's moisture. So that adds moisture to the basement and one of those things that we've been talking about that we don't want as well. But from a health and safety, it's carbon monoxide. And there are some protocols that home performance consultants, if you're doing an energy audit or looking to work within the Focus on Energy program, it's a very serious and standard protocol that they address before they provide recommendations.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we had Gary in Iron River emailed with a point about using a window air conditioner in the unit in the basement. If trying to use the window AC as a dehumidifier, it's important to ensure it is set to the recirculation mode and is intaking air from the basement and cooling it and dehumidifying it. If you use a fresh air setting, you are cooling and dehumidifying the outside air and blowing it into the house, hoping the other humid air leaks out elsewhere.
Yeah, good. Great advice.
That is a very good point. Tim and Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for the call. Just wondering, we've got a small cabin that's about 600 square feet with a loft, and we have electric heat in it. Is there a price point where LP gas would be a lot cheaper to operate or heat that cabin than electricity?
Well, you know, the biggest variable that's going to determine that will be how tight of an envelope you have, how well insulated the envelope to that cabin is.
Yep. Because we just had it dense packed the sides and the cathedral ceiling through the entire thing last fall.
Okay, so then it would be possible. I mean, there's some computer programs out there that allow us to model what's going on with your particular structure and look at the likely, demand. And then just based on current pricing for different fuels, you can figure out, what the difference in cost would be. And then if you're looking at upgrading equipment from one to another, compare the payback to the investment.
Propane per BTU produced per gallon of propane and electric heat, typically propane hovers lower for unit of heat than electricity, but not always. And there's times where electricity is actually cheaper than propane. But historically, electric heat is always is more expensive. Though, as Chad said, if you're using it on occasion and you're not up there and the hours of runtime is relatively small, then the investment for a gas heating system and the tank really isn't warranted. But if you were, it all changes when you spend a lot of time and full time up there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Jacob in Minnesota writes to us and says, I'm purchasing a home that has a big fuel oil wood boiler in the basement that heats the house. Is it better to use the fuel oil or wood to run this? Which would be cheaper to use?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the cost of wood, but generally wood might be a little bit cheaper, but more labor intensive, right? And all the hauling and the cleanup that comes with wood. But if you have easy access to wood, I certainly would think that would be more economical than purchasing fuel oil.
Aggie in Manitowoc, we're on to you now. Hi, Aggie.
Hi, good morning. We have a two-story brick house, and the layers of brick. There's three layers of brick on the bottom and two layers upstairs, and then there's a stone foundation. Under the kitchen part, there was a crawl space that the owners before us dug out and made a basement. So there's a stone foundation, a space, and then there's a inside cement block wall. Just wondering if we insulate that in between those, that block wall and that stone foundation, is that going to cause a problem with humidity? Because we have a lot of humidity in our house, even in winter. We have hot water heat for our furnace.
Mm-hmm. So you have access from the crawl space between this interior block wall, which is now...
We're in the process of remodeling our kitchen.
Okay.
So we can get access from the top to have blown in foam insulation.
Yep.
Would that cause a bigger problem with the humidity? Because our house is so humid anyways.
Yeah, I'd have to
leave that open.
And what was determining you to go between the block wall? So the block wall has been renovated and they put a new foundation.
The floor is cold, and that, you know, it's along the outside walls, and that floor is really cold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we just thought, because our piping runs down right next to that.
Mm-hmm. I guess if that, the spray foam, so you're going to spray foam the backside of the exterior stone foundation. Is that correct?
It would be the interior of the stone and the backside of the block.
Yeah.
And there's space in between there.
Is just a couple inches space between there?
No, it's about a foot. Oh, 18 inches.
Yeah, it's like about
that.
A foot. So that's a lot of.
Yeah.
To fill up there, if that was the plan. I think you'd be okay as long as, like you say, moisture and water is the problem. So if you've got good drainage and you don't have a spring underneath there or some crazy thing like that, and the rainwater is able to be diverted away from the house, I think that you would be okay.
Because we thought maybe we should leave it open for air flow. Not that air blows through there, but just for air so that it doesn't get more humid in the house.
To ventilate that crawl space?
Yeah. It's not really a crawl space. It's just in between the... Because they built the basement underneath, but they did it, you know, inside.
Yeah.
18 inches in from that stone foundation.
Oh, I see. So you got that. Yeah, that's a little tricky. It might be something that we'd want to take a look at. But if the conditioned space in the basement is on the interior of the block wall, and then you got that foot space and the perimeter of the wall is cold, I wonder if you could, yeah.
Hmm.
I'll have to think about that. Not sure if we can insulate that floor. You know, the underside of the floor might be where the insulation goes.
That would be better, yeah.
If there's a way to get a skinny guy in there or somehow reach up and spray the underneath, the underside of that floor system, I think would be the better bet and put, you know, 5 inches there.
Yeah. I got another question quick. The rest of the foundation is stone basement. We painted that inside walls of those stones with that white stuff so that the moisture doesn't come through.
Yep.
Is that a bad thing to do?
Well,
I heard from a different home shows that stone foundations are like sponges and they absorb moisture and they have to have somewhere for it to go.
Well, any masonry, I mean, any, you know, any foundation pretty much is, you know, cement or block, whatever the case may be, is a porous foundation. And the best place to waterproof it and to help prevent or reduce deterioration due to moisture is on the exterior side. So when you paint the inside, even of a concrete wall, but particularly with the old stone with the mortar and some other issues that are more unique to that, what you're doing is you're not allowing that material to ever dry out, because it will dry to the inside. And that's why our basements tend to be very damp, particularly in the winter, because they're drying to the inside of that building. And you're preventing that, so you're helping to reduce the humidity in your basement, but you're keeping that wall at a higher level of humidity as a result of that. So it's kind of like you've created a dam on the living side, but thus the whole structure itself is staying more moist than it might otherwise be. So it is a little risky in that regard.
Would that, like, and wear away at the foundation quicker, or what do you?
Well, a better strategy, which is just a general good strategy no matter what your foundation, is to have good grading on the outside so that water, the bulk water that's falling when it rains and when the snow melts, goes away from the foundation, and so that the ground near the house is a little bit drier than the ground might be 10 and 20 feet away from the foundation. Mm-hmm. And if you have the opportunity to ever apply waterproofing to the exterior side because of some other excavation that might happen, that is a great way to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Joe in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Joe.
Oh, hi. I think my question was just answered. I have a garage attached to the house, and we have a moisture problem. And the garage is down into the ground, and I noticed the concrete floor is wet all the time in the summer.
Yeah.
Can we? I have worked on the outside to grade everything so that we're not getting rainwater coming through at all. And I fixed the cracks in the foundation, but the concrete floor, it's wet all summer long. And is that a problem? And what about the air quality in the garage? Is that a problem?
Well, one thing that we always have to be concerned about when we have an attached garage is that, when a vehicle is out there or you keep maybe a lawnmower and gasoline and other things that are volatile and toxic, we don't want air from the garage being sucked into the house. And I know this doesn't have anything to do with your question, but I always like to mention it because that's just something we always have to be worried about. I'm not worried about the air quality really in the garage per se, but I don't want that air migrating easily into your living space. Because chances are when you're out in your garage, you might have a door open, or you're certainly not running the vehicle while you're out there if it's closed up. So, I would be concerned about making sure that air is not leaking into the house. Now, the moisture on the slab, I mean, that's something that I've seen once or twice before, but I'm not quite sure, what explains it. And maybe John has some thoughts on that, but, I'm not sure.
Yeah, just noticing the color of the concrete is indicating that it's staying damp, right?
Yes, it's turning dark, which looks like mold.
Okay, so maybe there's some growth there as well, you're saying, some more growth. Maybe if we've done everything on the exterior to keep the moisture out, a sealer just might be a product that's going to be a good fit for that application. And as Chad said, we've disconnected the garage from the house through, a real tight air barrier between the two, and a nice sealer on the inside. Maybe it needs washed and cleaned up, and a sealer, that might be the best strategy.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And on to Dutch in Monroe. Hi, Dutch.
Good morning.
Morning.
Can you hear me pretty decent?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Say, I got a couple different areas, but the first area, we're going to re-shingle our roof. Our house was built back in the early 1920s. It's got a roof like a Dutch barn. My question is this. We want more ventilation going up to the attic, and I noticed that I can drill holes and where the soffits are to get the air to come up, but where the attic meets the second floor, that flooring and the board, the flooring goes out to the exterior wall. Can I drill safely holes in there like it did with the soffit on the lower part of the house?
So your attic has floorboards. It's a walk-up attic.
Yeah.
Yep, and you want to drill through those floorboards to extend the ventilation, the outdoor air to have a path to get into the attic.
Right. The floor itself isn't to the exterior walls. It would be like the downstairs ceiling. Those boards go to the exterior. Would it be safe to drill holes in there so that I can have air ventilation to come all the way up? Or would I be wasting my time and energy doing all this?
Chad, is there alternatives to drilling holes in that small soffit? There's some continuous soffit vent that I know goes on the first course along the roof line?
Yeah, I mean, one option that you have that we're increasingly looking at for fixing up older homes, and it works nicely on a newer home too, is you can add a layer of insulation board which has a ventilation layer on top of that, and then a piece of plywood or OSB, and the new roof goes over this sandwich of insulation and a ventilation plane. And what that does is it allows you to keep the roof ventilation where it belongs, which is directly below the roof sheeting. And, you know, then because when you're drilling holes in the structure like this, what you're actually doing is you're inviting the air to move around through all those floor joist and ceiling joist cavities and, you know, all through the house, basically. So you're basically making the house itself or the shell of the house leaky while you are trying to ventilate the roof. And so that's always a challenge when we retrofit a home and we try to better insulate walls and attic cavities. We're trying to provide for some ventilation while also sealing up the shell of the living space so that it's tight and well insulated. And it sounds to me, I'm somewhat familiar, I think it's a Dutch colonial style. I actually lived in one of those homes and built one. And I'm familiar with the challenges of those intersecting points. And I think you want a well insulated shell. And then if you can provide some ventilation under the roofing, that would be the best thing.
I had planned on putting some styrofoam panels on to get attached to the roof boards, whatever you call them, or sheeting, and then drill those holes into the exterior part where the soffit is, and then right where the second floor meets the attic floor. That would not be and I would go maybe. Not every truss, but like every other or every two or something like that, you know. Because we have the ice damming on the roof, and now we're going to have this new shingle to put on. I don't want to go through the same BS again like I had before.
Yeah, so one question is your insulation now located in the floor of the attic or in the roof system?
Well, there's some of the old style insulation that they put in homes years ago. It looked like old dried out corn cobs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we have insulated the attic floor itself because we don't use it for storage anymore. We just want to close it off.
Okay, so the first, just decide if you're going to keep the attic floor insulated really well and then try to get that eave vented through every one and don't shortchange yourself. You would need more if you're just drilling through the soffit if you're going that method. And Chad, I think, was leaning towards moving the whole insulation, the thermal system, to the roof. And there's special products to do that. And certainly it could be a consideration, especially if you're going to use that attic in the future or want that space.
There will be a ridge vent put into the roof. So I figured, well, geez, you got a ridge vent, you're going to have something to push that air up, you know?
Yep. I guess I'd recommend a home performance consultant through the Focus on Energy program. So I would take a look at Focus on Energy, and they really get on site and provide a thorough assessment. It's going to be the best way to go.
Yeah, I mean, inadvertently, the holes you're drilling could end up causing much worse ice dams, but it's hard without being there and kind of walking through it. You know, you might be doing something that's going to help your situation, or you could make it much worse. So it is definitely tricky business.
Yeah, it sure is. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, John Viner, senior project manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking summer ventilation, dehumidifying, and other home repair projects with our two guests, Chad Spade and John Viner. Thank you so much for listening in today. Rich in Chippewa Falls has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Rich.
Hey, guys. A couple of questions. I've got a house that's about 35 years old, and it's got kind of an old house smell, and it's not really bad, but, you know, occasionally I get it's worse sometimes than others. It's kind of a musty smell. You know, if you go into an older house, you smell this smell often. And wondering, how can I deal with that? Is there a way to get rid of it? I've heard something about something called ozone treatment, or what can you tell me on that?
Yeah, where you're taking care of the air itself, the indoor air quality, just to have an air cleaner and an ozone, a product that produces ozone to drop some of the particulates out and the odors out of the air that I know has been affected. There's certainly some question to potential health effects for ozone generators in related to indoor air quality. So I generally do not recommend them because there isn't a lot of standards regulating those types of products. Not that in localized areas it can't work. It does at times, and people like them, but I use them with caution or recommend them with caution.
What are other ways to get rid of that smell?
Yeah, well, I guess it comes down to moisture management. Generally, if it's musty, we got to figure out where the moisture is coming from, where the condensate is, and try to just take the first step in localizing where it might be. Somebody with a sensitive nose and trying to manage humidity levels and or just rainwater from getting in the cracks and crevices in the wrong spot. Because
I've done a lot of checking, a lot of looking around.
Yep.
And since I moved into the house less than a year ago, I've done a good job of keeping the humidity down. By the way, what is a good humidity level?
Well, in the wintertime, say a comfort level for us human beings is around 30% to 50%, but that doesn't mean you won't have condensation on the windows. And as the temperature gets really dry, or as the temperature gets really low in the wintertime, that humidity level, you know, keeping it on the end of the spectrum of 30% is going to help minimize condensation. It doesn't mean somebody isn't going to be sensitive in that home and get a nosebleed. So now we have this balancing act to manage. So 30 and 40% in the dead of winter is just a pretty good strategy. Most people can manage that, and some can't. But then in the summer, obviously we're just, I'm thinking high 40s, low 50s, near that 50 range is a good manage point.
There you go.
Okay. Water pressure tank sweating, just insulating it, would that take care of that?
Yeah, insulating that with maybe with a duct wrap or an insulation product that has a vapor barrier attached to it. So that might be fiberglass insulation with a vinyl wrap around it that they use to insulate ducts. We want something that is vapor impermeable wrapped around that tank, and then have it be sealed really nicely. Just putting fiberglass up there or foam board and trying to wrap it and having seams that leak it just won't cut it. We've got to have a nice vapor barrier wrap around that tank to prevent it.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Joanne emailed us, "My husband and I live on the third floor of a condo building. We've had changes in the residence on the first and second floors and now have smokers living there. The smoke can be smelled, sometimes strongly, sometimes less so, in our unit. How do we approach the problem? What can we do to stop the infiltration?" That's
working with that property owner or manager, maintenance manager. It's the condos, it's just simply known for a lot of convoluted pathways from one unit to the other. And it's often getting in an attic space or between floors. It's not an easy task sometimes, that's for sure, because things are already built and sometimes deconstruction has to take place to find where that path is. It may be back to somebody who's done a lot of air sealing. Might be an insulator that somebody that has taken on specializes in sealing homes, sealing cracks and crevices. Just somebody that can look at the building and have a good idea that, yes, I've done this before. I've been here. I know where it's at. Some of these buildings are built identical or very similar with the similar components and plans. And getting somebody in there to that's familiar with the building type is going to be key. And then not only looking at the building shell, the framing members, but then the duct systems and making sure that they're not interconnected or bath fans and things like that aren't an issue as well.
Kevin in Toma has a question for you guys. Let's go there. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I had a question regarding controlling humidity and new construction. We're planning on building a wall system with a 9-inch thick double stud exterior walls with an inner and outer 2x4, creating a space of about 2 inches between the 2x4s to reduce thermal bridging. As far as insulation, we were considering using 1-inch sprayed closed foam, cell foam, and 8-inch, behind that 8 inches of blown fiberglass. In relation to controlling humidity, my questions were, what type of house wrap or rain screen system would you recommend that would let the walls stay dry? And what type of whole house ventilation system would you recommend?
Okay, well, I commend you for the approach to the exterior wall. I mean, I do think that the basic design of that wall is going to be very good at creating an effective thermal envelope and providing a lot of comfort. What I would say to you is that house wrap, you know, which can be the old school house wrap, which is tar paper, or of course things like Tyvek, which are more commonly used today, are designed to keep the water out. And what are you going to be using for siding?
We're planning on using cement board.
Okay, cement board. So what I would recommend is that the wrap that is installed on the outside, I presume that there will be either an OSB or ideally maybe a plywood that's put up on the exterior that the spray foam is applied to from the inside of the building. It's applied to the exterior wall. Is that correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
So then I would recommend that you put up a drain plane wrap. It used to be called stucco wrap. It's a Tyvek that has little ridges that run from top to bottom, and it helps to encourage the flow of any water that gets behind the siding assembly.
Okay.
And helps get that water down to the bottom piece of flashing that should kick it out on the outside of the building. And so flashing details are really critical around all the windows and doors. It's important to pan the sill of every window and door such that any water that gets through the bottom of that window or door still ends up getting shunted to the exterior of your house wrap. And that should help keep the water out of the structure. I would definitely recommend some well-designed overhangs on the building to also help contribute to that. And then as far as moisture control on the inside, I mean, that's where you have to be concerned with the vapor barrier and making sure that the moist air, particularly in the wintertime, is not driving into that wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it does get wet, that it's able to dry out. So we primarily work with a product called Membrane, which is kind of like a smart water retarder. It's going to allow some vapor to pass through when humidity rises, which would typically be when the wall has gotten wet or damp in some way. And that approach is generally good for an exterior wall.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, air sealing overall is very important. The densely packed insulation is important.
Mm-hmm. And from a I think you mentioned ventilation systems in the house. That was a question as well.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have the choice there, whether it's standard exhaust fans, whether it's a heat recovery ventilator or an energy recovery ventilator, right?
Okay, so right, yeah.
Those are your options that you're probably investigating on the internet of what's good. And they all have the capacity to work well. If we really want 24-hour ventilation, then maybe a heat recovery ventilator or an energy recovery ventilator is certainly a great strategy to go. Exhaust fans that have the capacity to run 24 hours a day and rated for continuous use. A lot of people use those and are just fine. Their homes are working well and don't have concerns. Advantage of a heat recovery or an energy recovery ventilator is that you can buy accessories for filtration, so you can filtrate that air coming in. So if there's people with allergies, and then you have some abilities to help them out as well. So it's a nice advantage.
Okay, super.
All right.
Okay. You mentioned OSB and plywood covering the exterior frame. Is there one you recommend over the other?
I'm a plywood fan just because OSB is not as structural, and it also tends to be a vapor barrier.
There we go. Thank you very much for calling. Chad Spade and John Viner, our guests today, they will be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network as we talk summer ventilation, dehumidifying, and other home improvement projects with Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner of the Energy Center of Wisconsin. He's senior project manager there. So great to have him along, too, and great to have you listening in. Questions? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, email talk at WPR.org, or on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can go there, too, and post a question. I had an email from Sam in Hudson, and he wonders, can I wet sponge my final coat of joint compound if it's already completely dry? I have a patch on my ceiling where I've removed a wall. I've put on the final coat of joint compound, the fourth coat, and I'd like to avoid having to hang plastic all over again in order to do the final sand. It's amazing how much dust is created even on the final layer. I've read that joint compound should still be wet in order to wet sponge.
It depends on the type of compound that's used, but many times, when you're doing drywall, you'll use compounds that have a chemical reaction to dry faster. So, you know, we refer to them by the number of minutes that it takes to dry. You might use a 20-minute compound for something you're trying to patch quickly and move on to the next coat. Those are powdered compounds that you mix up with water, and then they, like I say, they dry quickly. It's a chemical thing. The type of compound that you buy pre-mixed in a bucket simply has to dry out. So the different compounds will respond differently to a wet sponge, and that will determine how successful you are sponging it to desired finish. But it is possible to do that.
Irma in Glendale, we're on to you now. Thank you for calling, Irma. Hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a dehumidifier that's over 15 years old, and I was wondering if it'd be more efficient to get a new one or if they're pretty much the same.
15-year-old.
Yeah, I think if it's working okay for you, and it's something we use maybe 2 months out of the year or 2 or 3 months out of the year.
That about right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that 15-year-old, if it's an Energy Star model, then if they've, I'm thinking they probably had them back 15 years, then you're good to go. And if not, I wouldn't race out to buy a new dehumidifier. As long as you see that unit filling up that bucket and you're emptying it, you know, every couple of days, then you know it's working for you, and I wouldn't rush out to buy a new one.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks for calling. And Terry in Milwaukee, hello to you.
Hey, hi, good afternoon. I'll be real brief. Regarding the caller or the email that you got on drywalling, I wet sand
the +3 drywall compound all the time, and it works just fine. But the reason I was calling was just before noon, there was a gentleman that called about what he described, an older smell in the house.
Yeah.
Or odor. Just a couple of real practical suggestions. Number one, he needs to repaint his walls. He's only been in there for less than a year, and if he hasn't repainted the ceiling and walls, he should consider that. The bathroom fixtures, without going into details as to why, older bathroom fixtures in a house where perhaps somebody's lived there for a long time would probably need to be replaced. Things happen to those wooden vanities next to toilets that can sometimes accumulate odors that he might be describing as older house odors. Definitely looking at any bathroom vanity or fixtures located near toilets would be a strong consideration. And if the carpet's been in there and the padding in certain rooms, getting rid of those things, those are obvious changes that can take place to remove odors. And then have an HVAC guy come in and look at whatever type of filter he's using on his furnace and clean the cold air returns. You know, sometimes you can do that by yourself, but that's probably the cold air returns before the filter is where you're going to accumulate dust that's been there for many years. Mm-hmm. So those are just some practical suggestions without him going out and buying all kinds of air filtration type of electronic devices. Just some good old-fashioned remodeling and repainting will eliminate a lot of what he's describing.
Excellent. Yep.
Those are good points. I'd actually thought about painting, too, because we had a situation in a house of some years back now, and we painted it, and the problem kind of went away. Yeah. Right. So, thanks, Jerry. We have Bob in Wauwatosa.
Good morning.
Hello to you.
We're doing a complete remodel of our master bathroom, and I'm wondering if your knowledgeable experts have any general advice they might have regarding the major pitfalls of one being one's own general contractor on this job, and also could they please provide a good resource, either online or something published, on being one's own general contractor?
Well, I'll answer the first question first. Certainly, when you're remodeling a bathroom, there are a lot of different details that need to happen sequentially. And part of what you're paying for, that I would argue is very valuable in having a general contractor, is expertise in coordinating those various sequential details and making sure that you know, the waterproofing is done properly prior to the tile going in, you know, prior to the plumbing fixtures and cabinets being set, et cetera, because if you end up with a problem at the end of the project, you may find that it's very costly to fix it. Having said that, you know, it is possible to seek out qualified professionals to do the various parts of the job and to manage that yourself as a homeowner. I am not recalling any particular resource that would be able to guide you in the you know, the art of remodeling it. There are some good, you know, do-it-yourself books that are available at the library or perhaps at the bookstore, and I don't know of any good online sites. I mean, you know, something like This Old House actually is an interesting online site that may have some information, but I'm just not aware of anything to recommend to you directly. It is definitely possible to manage these things, and I would recommend utilizing something like the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, and perhaps maybe the Better Business Bureau, or a service maybe like Angie's List that allows you to vet the various subcontractors that you're going to be inviting into your home to get their opinions and their pricing as part of this process? Because that's the other thing that a contractor brings into it. You know, as a professional, I know and trust a number of subcontractors out there that we bring into projects. There are a number of people I know who I don't trust, who I would never bring into a project. Yeah. And so, you know, my experience allows me to provide that level of service that, and I'm sure there are people in your area that could do that as well. You're going to have to do that research and make sure that you're not just getting a sales job from someone. You want to, you know, do things well.
Yeah.
So
there you go. Good points. Yeah. One, and John, go ahead.
Yeah. One source might be Green Building Advisor. I believe it's simply greenbuildingadvisor.com. They might have some really good details there. And one pitfall to avoid is just make sure you got a good ventilation system. That might mean a real high quality fan, good ductwork, short venting, you know, just so that you're removing that moisture as well as you can. Do a little research on that end and avoid that one at all costs. So,
thanks, Bob, for calling. Actually, there's a sort of a related email question from Charlie in West Allis, wondering exactly how much work you can do without a permit. West Allis seems to have very stringent rules for what a homeowner can and cannot do themselves. I can do most, if not all, plumbing, electrical, remodeling, but can't necessarily afford to hire or employ a contractor?
It's a good question. The basic rule for tearing things apart and putting them back together in a home is that if the cost of those tasks exceeds $1,500 or the value of it, then you're to have a building permit. There are certain things that don't require a building permit. So the best way, and this varies from municipality to municipality, because while we have certain codes that govern the entire state of Wisconsin, there are particular codes that and enforcement that is unique to each municipality. So, for example, the cost of a permit and whether or not a permit is required will be determined by whatever city or township you're in. So I would recommend calling the building inspector where you live and having in West Allis and having a conversation about what exactly you're doing. It's important to know an estimated cost for the various things that you're going to be doing, and they will help guide you with the process. My experience is that the professionals in the building inspection office are very helpful, particularly with homeowners.
Good question. Mary in Milwaukee, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hey. Well, my question's a pretty broad one at this point, but we are doing some upgrades on a 1940s era duplex, and the big question is, if we want to do some kitchen flooring, what are some good sources for sustainable materials to use?
Good sources. Where do you live?
In the city of Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee, okay. Well, you know, for a kitchen, some of the types of floors that we recommend, there are linoleum products now that are, you know, linoleum is a much greener alternative to vinyl floors, and linoleum has actually come a long way. It's a better product now than it was 50 years ago. There's some great linoleum products. You know, many wood floors are very appropriate to put in a kitchen. I mean, some people don't like having a wood floor in a kitchen, but it's very common. I would say well over half of the kitchens we renovate end up with wood floors, often reclaiming, refinishing the original floor that's underneath, you know, 1 to 3 layers of tile and vinyl. You know, wood, I mean, obviously you can look at sustainably harvest and locally harvest wood, and we do get a lot of hardwoods in Wisconsin, so there's a lot of local wood out there. For particular places to acquire it, you know, that's a tough one because it's very, I mean, because I'm committed to working with my local suppliers, you know, I know where to go in Madison for different things, but I'm not sure about in the Milwaukee area. But
are there maybe websites that would be helpful?
And just comparing in terms of their...
Materials or wear, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Boy, one's not coming to mind. Right.
Yeah, but I think, you know, you kind of know what you're looking for, so I think by Googling those things, I suspect some information might come up, and I'm sure, you know, if there's some like the Green Building Initiative or something like that in Milwaukee that might be able to help out, you know, I'm sure if you contact some of the, I know in Madison we have a few flooring and material showrooms that are dedicated largely to more sustainable products.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you don't have something like that in Milwaukee, I'm sure at least one of the retailers has a niche in helping people with that. So.
Yeah. We did a lot of, because we were doing a whole house remodel and part of it was the kitchen and unfortunately the wood floor underneath was too far gone to use. So we had to come up with a new one. We wound up with cork, which a lot of people, Judah's saying they have cork in their kitchen as well. Well, you probably put in, Chad.
That's correct. Yes, we've put in some cork for a number of clients. It's very popular. There's a little bit of maintenance involved with it, but it's
not bad. It's nice to walk on. Boy, it's great in the kitchen. For
very comfortable.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I appreciate the help.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Bonnie in Mount Horeb wonders if you guys could tell her how to improve the heat in a bedroom that's on the south end of the house. It's the coldest room in our ranch-style house. Is it that I need more insulation on the walls? I've had a couple of guys take a look at the heating cooling system. It seems to work fine, but still get about 10 degrees difference between that room and the rest of the house.
Yeah, so we're dependent on the age of the house and whether... the walls are fully insulated. That's going to be key to know that that's there. And simply sometimes it does come down to windows do make a difference, certainly at the end of the house. So if we have a single pane or just an older double pane that's leaky, those types of things that are going to create the heat loss in the wintertime contribute to it. And trying to overcome that amount of heat loss in a bedroom that often is the farthest from the furnace becomes a challenge. There's no question about it. If there's ways to manipulate dampers, some of the older homes actually do have dampers in their ductwork, and homeowners just are unaware of it, that you have some control to increase the flow into the farthest room by manipulating the dampers. Really, it's insulating an air sealing, knowing that that's all up to snuff, and we just aren't able to answer that until that visual inspection of a home performance contractor or consultant makes that analysis, maybe with a blower door and air leakage test. And then it is distribution of heat. Once we know the building shell and the attic and the walls and the windows as good as we can get, it's often that combination of those conservation measures of insulation and a well-designed heating system and increasing the flow.
All right.
A number of things got to come together to make that work.
We have Scott in Mequon is hoping for some clarification. He has several outdoor thermometers with humidity displays, and all of them show that humidity actually increases at night, not decreases. And Chad and John, you guys were talking about blowing air in the evening. Are you sure? Is that a correct thing to do, or is he just having instruments that are not accurate readers of humidity level?
Right. Well, let me clarify the comments I made earlier, because when we talk about using a whole house fan and wanting to cool off a house with the outside air, an experience that many of us have with our homes is that, at the end of the day, we find that our house is a lot hotter than it is outside. And so the question is, how do you bring that cooler exterior air into the house to help cool it off? And a whole house fan can help do that. But if you were to run that fan all the time and run it during the day when it is very hot or potentially hot and humid, then you're really not using that tool, that appliance, to actively cool the house. So you do have to manage it. It's not as simple as just having a thermostat on say, you know, your furnace or your air conditioner. So the idea is that if the air outside is more comfortable than the air inside, you want to be able to utilize that system. But then when the outside air is becoming uncomfortable, you shut things up and keep the more comfortable air and climate in your home. So that's the basic concept. If humidity is still high outside at night, well, then perhaps you don't want to be bringing in the outside air, and you want to be using other strategies with dehumidification and an enclosed home. So every situation can be different.
And I'll add one more thing. As let's say the temperature outside drops to 70 degrees and the humidity levels go up as he's reading. I think his instruments are reading correctly. And the humidity is now jumped up to 75% relative humidity, 70 degrees outside. When you bring that air into, say, your 80-degree house, it doesn't mean your house is going to be 75% relative humidity because you're bringing it into a warmer conditioned space. So once that air, 75% relative humidity outdoor air comes into your house, it actually lowers in humidity because your house is warmer.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
That makes good sense. We have Bob in Wausau with a question. Bob, hello.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, my question is that I have a modular home. It was or a duplex, actually. It was a Stirling system, and back in, it's probably about 17, 18 years ago when it was built, they used to put the Tyvek against the studs, and then they put the OSB over the top of that. So then they put the siding on. So my question is, can I put Tyvek on the outside of that yet?
What do you think, John?
Yeah, I think that you can. Really, we want to use that Tyvek as a way to manage rainwater when it gets behind siding, because we know it gets behind every type of siding, no matter how you put it on. So we want to keep that that exterior sheathing nice and dry. That double layer of Tyvek, both of them are very vapor permeable, which we want. So long as we face that Tyvek the correct direction, water vapor is going to go to the exterior and you won't have a problem.
All right.
Trapping moisture between you.
Oh, we lose. Oh, Bob, thank you. I think hopefully we got that taken care of for you. Todd, have you got a quick question? Hi.
Hi. Say, yeah, I've got a house about 20 years old, and the roof is causing me some problems. It's 4/12 pitch, 2 foot on center, and the gentleman that built it put 7/16 sheathing on it. Well, the three-tab shingles are starting to peel up. I know they need to be replaced, but I don't think there's enough support between the two-foot trusses to support a new roof, and I prefer to go with a steel roof. What do I do to prep this roof to put the steel on?
Got about less than a minute.
Yeah, well, I mean, the simplest thing to do, and we do this whenever we encounter a roof deck that has too thin a sheathing on it, is to just add another layer once you've removed the existing roofing material. And that way, with a double layer, you benefit from that old material and what it has to offer. And then, you know, typically we'll put another layer of the 7/16 or half inch. And then you'll have a much stronger roof deck. That's the simplest way to deal with that. Ideally, if you glue them together, that's even better.
Thank you so much for calling. And Chad and John, thank you so much. Great to have you with us. You'll be back again, I hope, presume?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link to his website, Chad's Carpentry. John Viner, Senior Project Manager at the Energy Center of Wisconsin. And certainly it's easy enough to go online, put Energy Center of Wisconsin in, and the search engine, you're going to find it. And we'll have those guys back, and we will do it all over again with them. Tomorrow, another edition of Garden Talk. Mark Snyder from the Madison Herb Society will be here to talk about herbs. Stay with us.